You're listening to the CyberWire Network, powered by N2K.
Hey, everybody. Today, I want to highlight a name that all of us know well, and that is our sponsor, Splunk. You need to keep operations humming around the clock, but potential disruptions are everywhere. Splunk helps you predict problems and find and fix issues fast so you can reduce risk and ditch downtime. The world's largest enterprises rely on Splunk's unified security and observability platform to become more efficient, resilient, and innovative. With Splunk, you can react quickly, evolve faster, and be ready for anything. Stay ahead of disruptions. Learn more at splunk.com/resilience. And we thank Splunk for sponsoring our show. In the dynamic world of enterprise security, identity architects and IT leaders face a major challenge. Growth by repeated acquisitions multiplies the complexity of everything. Multiple IDPs, MFA providers, policy engines that all need to coexist. This can lead to fragmented user identities and policies that create security vulnerabilities and add access friction. Strata Identity solves this. Now you can decommission unneeded IDPs and consolidate the ones you'd like to keep without rewriting apps or disrupting users, engineers, and app owners. Plus, Strata's modular architecture makes it easy to integrate with any identity provider without manual maintenance and coding. Join the ranks of cybersecurity leaders using identity orchestration. Visit strata.io/cyberwire, share your top identity security priorities, and receive a pair of complimentary AirPods Pro. Offer valid for organizations with over 5,000 employees. Step into a new era of identity management at strata.io/cyberwire. Elections and election influence operations in Europe and the difficulty of taming Fancy Bear. Some weekend reading. The Google Docs worm and dynamite phishing incident takes an odd but implausible turn. Snake malware seems poised to strike at Mac users. And there's a new product in the crime-as-a-service market. It's called Fatboy, it speaks Russian, and yes, it's ransomware. I'm Dave Bittner in Baltimore with your CyberWire summary for Friday, May 5th, 2017. French voters will elect their next president this weekend, and the election's final week has been roiled by accusations that Marine Le Pen's campaign colluded with Russia. Her opponent, Emmanuel Macron, currently holds a lead in the polls. Both candidates are, relatively speaking, outsiders. Macron says his organization experienced attempts to get at its emails and that these attempts were thwarted. In Germany, which will hold its federal elections on September 24th, the director of the Domestic Intelligence Service, BFV, warns that their agency has seen a marked increase in Russian cyber espionage directed at influencing the elections. Think tanks associated with both major parties in Chancellor Merkel's coalition government have been targeted. In both France and Germany, as was the case in the U.S., Russia's GRU, Fancy Bear, as it's come to be familiarly known, is the animal of interest. One might wonder, then, what effect Western countermeasures may have had on such Russian activity. Wired magazine takes a look at what U.S. sanctions did to slow down election-focused Russian cyber espionage and conclude that the sanctions accomplished essentially nothing. Fancy Bear is prancing through Western networks clad in the barest fig leaf of plausible deniability. Brazen is what Wired calls fancy. According to New American Foundation analyst Peter Singer, that's because sanctions are effective when they hold something valuable at risk. What's valuable to Russian President Putin, Singer thinks, is concealment of oligarchical corruption and his own personal wealth from the Russian public. And sanctions are shrugged off because they haven't successfully exposed this. Those interested in the historical continuity of Cold War espionage and propaganda with current cyber and influence operations will find the National Security Archive's Cyber Vault Highlights, just published by George Washington University, worth consulting. and it's all properly declassified and FOIA'd, so presumably safe for work. No WikiLeaks dodginess about it. It's the Cyber Vault, and that's not Vault 7. Another set of readings worth consulting may be found listed in Palo Alto's cybersecurity canon, their honor roll of books they think every cyber practitioner should consult and master. Every year, Palo Alto inducts a new class. We were at their gala in Washington last night, and the books and authors are well worth your attention. Check out the CyberWire Daily News Brief today for a full list. The Google Docs worm phishing campaign has taken a very odd turn. Many remarked when it first surfaced on its similarities to the tactics, techniques, and procedures used by PawnStorm. You remember PawnStorm, Trend Micro's name for what the other people call Fancy Bear, APT28, or the GRU. But attribution is notoriously difficult, and it won't be easy here either, because someone seems to be interested in muddying the waters. A person claiming to be a student at Coventry University says he was responsible for the episode, and that it wasn't really an attack, just a test or a trial. A test of what, or a trial of what, isn't clear. Nor is it clear that the person claiming responsibility is particularly plausible himself. Bleeping Computer calls him some Twitter dude, and that's not an unfair characterization. This Twitter dude identifies himself as Eugene Popov, but Coventry University says they've never heard of any Eugene Popov, and that Eugene Popov doesn't appear to be one of their students. There are other grounds for skepticism, too. For one thing, the Twitter account, at Eugene Popov, was registered essentially simultaneously with the attacks. Maybe that's legitimate, but it certainly looks like a sign of track-covering disinformation. Nor does the address that registered the account look right either. Finally, the account has a picture associated with it, as accounts do, and this picture is of another Popov entirely, a presumably innocent and uninvolved molecular biologist at the Russian Academy of Sciences Institute of Molecular Genetics. So no, the smart money is on Eugene Popov not being at all who he claims to be. His Twitter account now seems to be gone too, but while it was up, it identified him as a white hat hacker. Few are convinced, but hey, stranger things have happened. Whoever's behind the incident, observers think OAuth abuse likely to continue. Google still gets good marks for quick reaction and containment of the incident, but Motherboard makes note of the fact that people, including Google, were warned of the possibility of such dynamite phishing almost 6 years ago. Researcher André Damar described it to an independent standard-setting body, the Internet Engineering Task Force, IETF, back in October 2011, and now his warnings seem to have come true. Snake malware, also known as Turla, Agent BTZ, or our favorite, Ouroboros, is back and getting an upgrade. Fox IT thinks it sees signs Snake is being prepared for use against macOS targets. The cyber espionage tool has been in use for about a decade, targeting embassies, government organizations, colleges and universities, pharmaceutical companies, and various researchers. Much of its activity has been focused on Ukraine, but other targets in Europe and North America have also been hit. As is the custom, Snake poses as a legitimate app, and it's often spread by phishing emails. So Mac users, stay alert. Recorded Future describes Fatboy, a new ransomware-as-a-service offering, on a Russian-language criminal forum. Customer support is available over Jabber, and there's even a user panel for customer engagement. High-Tech Bridges Ilya Kolachenko sees this as a foreseeable evolution of the crimeware black market toward commodification. The same thing, after all, happens in legitimate markets. Kolachenko says, quote, "Ransomware is about business, not about technology," end quote. And for now, at least, ransomware seems to be good business. For a bad business, that is.
And now, a word from our sponsor, Zscaler, the leader in cloud security. Cyber attackers are using AI in creative ways to compromise users and breach organizations. In a security landscape where you must fight AI with AI, the best AI protection comes from having the best data. Zscaler has extended its Zero Trust architecture with powerful AI engines that are trained and tuned by 500 trillion daily signals. Learn more about Zscaler Zero Trust plus AI to prevent ransomware and AI attacks. Experience your world secured. Visit zscaler.com/zerotrustai. The IT world used to be simpler. You only had to secure and manage environments that you controlled. Then came new technologies and new ways to work. Now, employees, apps, and networks are everywhere. This means poor visibility, security gaps, and added risk. That's why Cloudflare created the first-ever connectivity cloud. Visit cloudflare.com to protect your business everywhere you do business.
And it's my pleasure to introduce a new partner to our podcast. I'd like to welcome Johannes Ulrich. He's the Dean of Research for the SANS Technology Institute, but many of you probably know him as the host of the ISC Stormcast podcast, another daily cybersecurity podcast. Johannes, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
We just want to start off by way of introduction. Tell us a little bit about yourself, your background, and what brought you to cybersecurity podcasting.
Well, I originally actually started out in physics. That's sort of where my career started, and that's what I went for school to school for. But while doing physics, I also ended up doing a lot of computer work, and with that also, well, I guess today you would call it Internet of Things, but remote control of experiments. That sort of got me into security in part because, well, you get into security by being breached at some point. For me, it was pretty simple. The home system I used to remote control my experiments was actually abused by a spammer that then sort of got me into firewall security and all of that good stuff. One thing I realized back then was that it's really hard for someone to understand when you're looking at your logs, what does it all mean, what's important, what's not important. So back in 2000, I started a system called theshield.org that collects firewalls from volunteers around the world. And that later then, as I joined SANS, became the Internet Storm Center. And well, what we're trying to do at the Internet Storm Center is to build a global information security sharing community. And part of this, of course, is getting the word out, disseminating what's happening today out on the internet. And that's sort of where the daily podcast that I'm doing fits in.
All right. Well, it is not unlike the CyberWire. It's a daily briefing of cybersecurity news. We were joking before we got on the air here that you sort of cover the morning drive time and we cover the afternoon drive time. So between the two of us, I think people really have all their cybersecurity news covered for the day.
Right. My goal is to make you sound smarter when you arrive in the office in the morning. So if you listen to the podcast in the morning, you get sort of the lowdown on the technical issues that happened. A little bit different from the CyberWire that really covers more of the politics and business also around security, which is also very important. I try to focus a little bit more on the nitty-gritty technical details.
Yeah, it's a great show. For those of you who haven't checked it out, it's the Stormcast podcast. And Johannes Ulrich, we're real happy to have you join us here on the CyberWire. We'll talk to you soon.
Managing the requirements for modern security programs is increasingly challenging and time-consuming. Enter Vanta. Vanta gives you one place to centralize and scale your security program. Quickly assess risk, streamline security reviews, and automate compliance for ISO 27001, SOC 2, and more. You can leverage Vanta's market-leading trust management platform to unify risk management and secure the trust of your customers. Plus, use Vanta AI to save time when completing security questionnaires. CyberWire daily listeners can get $1,000 off by going to vanta.com/cyber. That's vanta.com/cyber.
My guest today is Alan Liska. He and Timothy Gallo are co-authors of the book Ransomware: Defending Against Digital Extortion. Alan Liska has worked as both a security practitioner and an ethical hacker.
Tim and I both work with a lot of different types of customers. What we were seeing very early on is that they were really concerned about ransomware, but we hadn't seen, and this is late 2015, early 2016, we hadn't seen as much of a response from the security community. There were a lot of blog posts and things like that, but our customers were really feeling like the vendors were letting them down. And we realized, well, there's nobody that's really offering a lot of advice on what you need to do in order to protect yourself from ransomware if you're a corporation. So we kind of got together and said, you know, we should write a book on this because, you know, we're giving out a lot of the same practical advice over and over again. And yeah, if we can sort of take what we've been telling people ad hoc and create a more formalized version of it, then I think we'd have something that would be useful to a whole lot of people. The first three publishers we reached out to disagreed with us completely. None of them had any interest at all in the book. And then we submitted it to O'Reilly, and within 30 minutes, we had a callback from our O'Reilly editor saying, yes, this is a great idea. We really want to do this.
What is it about ransomware that makes it a little tougher for people to wrap their arms around?
I think it's kind of strange. Yeah, there's the Poneman study that's done repeatedly that says that, you know, most breaches go undetected for, I think it's about 150 days right now. And so when you think of a breach, especially in a corporation, most of the time, the breach itself doesn't disrupt business operations. So you're breached, data is leaving your network for months, possibly being undetected, but the day-to-day operations of the business go on. It's only after it's discovered and, you know, and incident response kicks in and so on, then maybe some business operations are disrupted. Ransomware disrupts immediately. You know immediately that something bad happened in your organization, and there's an immediate cost, right? There may be a cost afterwards if it's discovered that you had a breach, especially if you were liable for something that happened, you know, if you were found to be negligent. But there's an immediate cost to ransomware. And so I think that's why it stays on the mind of so many people, is because it's an attack that is very tangible to those organizations.
Take me through some of the highlights of the book. What are some of the things that you all cover?
We start with the history of ransomware, and then we dive into kind of why, you know, the economics of ransomware, why ransomware makes sense from the point of view of the bad guy. You know, a lot of people don't think about that, but, you know, there are organizations, in some cases professional organizations, that are behind these ransomware campaigns. So understanding why they are doing what they're doing and you know why it's profitable for them to do this. We carve out a chapter to discuss whether or not you should pay the ransomware. And despite our best efforts, it's not just one page with the word no written in 96-point font. it's more of a nuanced discussion around that. And then the bulk of the book is, what can you as an organization do to protect yourself against ransomware? What are some steps that you can do, both from a practical perspective, here's some things that we can secure, and from an educational perspective, how can we know what's going on? How can we educate our users? And then we highlight some of the different types of ransomware and some of the biggest ransomware campaigns that are currently out there to give people a feel for the different approaches the ransomware authors are taking.
While you all were doing the research for the book, was there anything that caught your eye, anything that surprised you?
I think the biggest thing that caught our eye, and Tim and I have been involved in the InfoSec world for a very long time, and so we're aware of how bad guys work and how organizations work to protect themselves and some of the limitations that they have in protection. But we were really surprised at the professionalism of some of the more advanced ransomware developers, you know, scheduled release cycles, patching their software, obviously operating help desks, which I'm sure you've seen out there. Those type of things that are really really the signs of a professional organization, and oftentimes working better than some, you know, legitimate software companies do.
That's Alan Liska, co-author, along with Timothy Gallo, of the book Ransomware, Defending Against Digital Extortion. If you'd like to hear more about ransomware, there's an extended interview with Alan on the next episode of the Recorded Future Inside Threat Intelligence podcast, scheduled for release this coming Monday, May 8th. And that's the CyberWire. We are proudly produced in Maryland by our talented team of editors and producers. I'm Dave Bittner. Thanks for listening. And now a word from our sponsor, Netskope. Netskope is a worldwide leader in SASE and Zero Trust. Its unified platform, Netskope One, provides optimized access and zero-trust security for people, devices, and data anywhere they go, helping customers reduce risk, accelerate performance, and get unrivaled visibility into any cloud, web, and private application activity. To learn more about how Netskope helps customers be ready for anything on their SASE journey, visit netskope.com.